speaker for this evening, and that's Eugene from Umpqua.
How y'all doing tonight? My name is Eugene, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. Looks like you got a good group right here, man. A lot of friendly faces, and everybody knows everybody. I was born in Portland, Oregon, and to mom and dad, and had a little sister. Started growing up. My dad was a little abusive. My mom got rid of him. And I was about three. I don't remember the dude. So my mom raised me and my sister. And when I was about 10 years old, she told me that I was adopted. Which at 10 years old, all I cared about was, you're still my mom, right? She said, yeah, I'm still your mom. I said, cool, then I'm good to go. But ever since she told me that, I always wondered what they looked like, who they were. And in the back of my mind, I always wondered, why didn't they want me? I wasn't even born yet. I didn't do anything wrong. What could I have done wrong if they didn't want me? And that rejection, I lived in Oregon, and up there I was cool. I had cool friends. I was like one of the cool kids. And when I was 10, 11, my mom moved us down to California. And up in Oregon, man, I dressed in like cowboy shirts, and I got corduroy bell-bottom pants with square-tip cowboy boots. I made that little funny noise when I walked, And I moved to California, and down here, it's a culture shock, blacks, Mexicans, whites. And I get there, and everybody's wearing like Levi's and white t-shirts and Vans, and they're like, what's up, country? And I'm like, oh, shit, I kind of stick out. I don't look like everybody else. And that was the first time it hit me, man. I want to fit in, And I couldn't fit in with the cool kids because I already showed them I wasn't cool. I'm country, So the only people that I could fit in with were the kids that were smoking weed, drinking beer, getting high, because they didn't care. They didn't care how I looked. As long as I was bringing a bag to the table, they were happy, So I started drinking. I started smoking weed and using meth at 11 years old, man. And at first I was just glad to be a part of something. I was glad to be, I had a crew now. I had people that liked me. I was accepted, And then the addiction took over, and I just liked hanging around. It was like a friendship thing. We're all hanging around and we're grouped up and doing stuff. And then pretty soon it got to where if I had money for alcohol, I didn't want to call nobody because I don't want to share none of my alcohol with them. And if there's a party, I'm going to be there, because then I don't have to pay for alcohol. It's free. So, and your alcohol is better than my alcohol, I got to a point where I started getting in trouble with the law. I caught my first prison term at 27. And, the first day that I was in there, my first trip in there, I was scared to death. I thought there was some big black guy in there named Bubba that wanted my butt. You've all seen the freaking movies. You know what I'm talking about. Ow, ow, ow. I don't want none of that, And I'm laying there. That's real. That's real, man. And I'm scared to death. I'm laying in my cell, and I'm freaking scared to death, and I'm crying, but I don't want my bunkie to hear me crying because I don't want him to think I'm a punk or I'm weak. And I'm thinking about my mom. I disappointed my mom and my parents. And I lost my freedom. And where's my life going to go from here? And then I got out to the yard. And I seen it was all the same homeboys that I was just with in county. Oh, I know these guys. All right. So did my first prison term. And I met a guy in there. I met an older cat in there. And he kind of took me under the wing. And he gave me some rules while I was there. And one of the rules was, you don't do drugs while you're in here. If you do drugs, you're going to die. Somebody's going to stab you in the neck. You're going to get into debt, or you're going to become a junkie in here. And that don't fly. So you can't use while you're in here. So I was like, cool. So I was sober for my first term. I was sober for all my terms. But just because I was sober doesn't mean that I was getting recovery. All I was doing, for me, it was just a timeout. And every time I go to prison, I've been to prison from 1985 until up to 2 years ago. I've done most of that time in prison. And every time I go in there, I don't use drugs. And My handle in there, my nickname was Joker. And that first term when I got in there, I put on this mask. And I'd go in there and ask, what's up, brother? How you guys doing, man? What's happening? And when new guys would come on the yard, they bring them over and, hey, talk to Joker. He'll run things down here. What's up, brother? How you doing, man? Welcome to the yard, brother. You know, I was just this hard-ass dude, but inside I'm just scared. I'm scared. I'm scared I'm going to get into a riot and I'm going to have to stab somebody or somebody's going to stab me and I'm never going to make it out of here. And it's just this mask that I put on so that people would respect me and like me. But it wasn't who I was, you know. So I got my first prison term and I was sober the whole time in there. I you know, just played basketball and pinochle and worked out. You know, they gave me the nickname Joker because I'm funny. Orale, look at that fucking Joker essay. It's cool right there, hey? You know? And I've had people tell me you should be on TV or you should be a comedian, like, you know? And then I get out. And as soon as I get out, I go right back to what I was doing right before I got in there. I go back to the drugging and drinking. And when I do that, I get recluse. I don't want to talk to people. I don't want to go out. I just want to do my own thing. My ex-wife used to say I was like a sergeant. She goes, you're always gruff. You're always snapping orders. You're mean. And, you know, why can't I be the person that I am in there out here? What the hell? You know? And I kept doing that. I caught one term, and then I'd get out. I'd be out for 30 days. I'd catch another term. Get out of that one, and I'd be out for 60 days. I'd catch another term. I did that for four terms back to back, a span of about 11 years. And then I got out and I found a girl that knew how to cook that shit that I liked. So we hooked up and then it was violation after violation after violation. And, you know, this last time that I went in, it was about 7 years ago, 6 years ago, I went in for a spousal abuse. And when I got in there, my ex-wife sent me divorce papers. And then when I got to county jail, it was almost like I was relieved when I got in there. I laid down, I was like, it's over. I'm done with that. Because I was looking for a way out of that before I ever got arrested, but I just couldn't see a way out. When I'm in the middle of that, I can't see a way out. I can't see a solution. You know, so this last term, man, right when I got into county jail, I prayed and I asked God. I said, look, you know, my mom's a Christian. So, and that's the way I was raised. I know everybody's got their own belief system. That's cool. But I was raised to be a Christian. So, and I always thought, I can't be a Christian. My mom doesn't drink. She don't smoke. She don't cuss. She don't do nothing wrong. I can't be that person. I can't be like that. In order to be a Christian, I got to be perfect. Well, that's not, I can't be that then. So I got in that jail cell, man, and I asked God. I said, God, look. I'll make you a deal. If you'll give me a normal life, I'll do my best to follow you. And this ain't talking about Christianity. It's not talking about any religion. I mean, following God, listening to his voice, you know? And because I mean, trust me, when I was out there doing all that stuff, every time I went to take a hit or get drunk, I knew it was wrong. I knew what I was doing was wrong, but I ignored that. I tried to drown it out with drugs and alcohol because I don't want to hear that. Because I just want to numb shit, you know? So, when I hit the prison yard this last term, you know, anybody that's been in jail, like if you get in there and you want to hit the weights, you don't go to the skinniest guy on the yard and say, hey, how do I get big? Because he don't know. You go to some big dude like you and say, hey, how do I get that? And he shows you the way to do it. Well, this is how I did it. And you can change your routine up any way you want. It's the same thing with this program. You know, I went in and I said, you know what? I need to do something different. And you guys got an answer to something. I want to know what you do. How do you do it? So I started going to AA. And they bring it into the prisons. If any of you ever get a chance to go into a county jail, a juvenile hall, or a prison, and talk to those guys in there, man, I'm telling you, that's where it's at. Because you can save somebody from doing a lot of time. You know. So I started going to AA in there. And matter of fact, I got this last term, I got put into fire camp. So I get to work my time off. I'm not just sitting behind a wall somewhere. I'm actually out fighting fires across California. I'm working my time off. And my foreman on my crew was 36 years in the program. And when I got on his crew, he goes, you know, I seen you out here on the yard. I seen you, you know, getting ready for this fire camp thing. I like your attitude. He goes, I want you to be on my crew. So he pulled me onto his crew. And he says, now, when's that going to happen? What's that? And he wouldn't tell me. He wouldn't. Okay, thanks. I didn't know that. And I'm like, what the fuck? What does this mean? I don't get that. What is that? I was on his crew for 3 years, and every couple of months he'd go, hey. And I'm like, hey. What the hell does that mean, you know? About a week before I get out, he pulled me off to the side. We had a little project we're doing. He said, hey, I want you to come work with me for a little bit. So I went with him. In the time that I was on his crew, I made my way up from the bottom man on the crew to the lead man on that crew. I ran us off for 3 years. And when we hit a fire, I'm the first one that punches in. I'm right on the heat. But he trusts me to lead the rest of those guys in there. And that's what he told me. He goes, look, man, I need somebody. You're older than most of the cats in here. And that's one thing. When I hit that prison yard, I'm getting in there, and there's kids in there going, man, what's up, OG? OG, I'm not. No. I'm still one of the fellas, man. I ain't no. Talking about OG shit. And I look in the mirror, and I got pepper, I got gray coming in right here, and wrinkles around my eyes. Holy crap, I'm getting old. You know, it's a span of almost 20 years I've been doing prison time. And that scared me. Am I going to do this the rest of my life? Now I'm 50 years old, I'm 47 years old, and by the time I get out of this prison sentence, I'm going to be 49 years old, 50 years old. And I don't have a skill set, man. Going to prison, that don't give you no pension. I mean, it's a nice country club, gated community. They got guards in there to watch you and everything. They feed you. But there's no retirement that comes with that. Nothing, you know. That $200 ain't big to invest with. And I thought to myself, you know, who's going to want to hire a 50-year-old and train him? Because guys that are already older, they're hard to train. They think they know it all already. Why would I hire a 50-year-old when I can hire a 25-year-old and have him around a lot longer? You know, and I started losing hope. Like, fuck, what am I going to do, you know? And my foreman would tell me like this. He asked me one day, he goes, what are you? I'm a convict, fool. What are you? Why are you asking questions? What's up? And he goes, no, but what are you? I said, I'm a freaking convict, you know? And there's a difference. If you guys, anybody that's been locked up knows there's an inmate and there's a convict. Convict knows what time it is. He knows how to do time. He's institutionalized. An inmate is probably his first trip in there and he don't know squat, you know? And you advance to the convict stage. So I told him, I'm a convict. He goes, wait a minute. He said, do you have a parents out there that are still alive? I said, yeah. And then you're a son. He said, you got an old lady? I said, well, I did. He goes, okay. Your boyfriend or husband? You got any kids? I said, yeah, but I don't know him. Okay, your dad? He said, and not only that, but we trained you. We trained you in the LA County Fire Camp. You're a trained firefighter professional. You're a wildland professional firefighter. You just don't make the money that those guys on them crews out there do, but you do the same job that they do. I'm like, okay, so? He goes, so then who are you? He said, put that convict down here at the bottom. Start looking at yourself differently. And when you start looking at yourself differently, pretty soon you're going to start believing it, and then other people are going to look at you differently. And I was like, oh, no shit. And he went, see? It just happened, didn't it? That is crazy right there. So, you know, and I've heard God's voice my whole life. It's my conscience. It's when I go to do something wrong and I know it's wrong and I do it anyway, I'm drowning out his voice. You know, and nowadays, like, when I got out of there, you know, I was lucky enough to find somebody while I was in there. I got hooked up with a friend that introduced me to a woman, and she'd come and visit me all the way out there in Sylmar every weekend from Lompoc. 2-hour drive both ways. Faithfully, every weekend she was there. And having somebody like that in your corner helps you, you know, especially somebody that's getting out that you don't have. $200 don't go far when you get out. And most guys don't know anything else but to go back to what they used to do. You know, every time I would get out of prison, I'd get out and I'd think, I'm going to get me a job. I want to drive one of them big excavators or a big front loader or something. I'm going to get a good job, making good money. But see, I don't have patience. That's why I did drugs and alcohol, because I got instant gratification. So when I get out and I'd go stay at my parents' house and I'd start looking for a job, and You know, a week goes by and 2 weeks and nothing's happening. I lose my patience, and the only thing I know is to go start hustling to make money. And then I'm right back into the same shit again. And a month later, I'm back in prison again. You know, I just didn't want to do that anymore. So I told God, you know, you give me a normal life, I'll do my best to follow you. And it's weird, but I hear his voice just about every day. And it comes and you know, when I started this program, we have AA every Sunday night, and we had panels that would come in, and I looked forward to seeing those people come in and hear their stories, and they'd bring cookies and stuff for us, and you know, a lot of times guys would want to go in there because they heard there's a girl coming. Oh, let's go. Let's see this. It's like, who the hell are you? I'm an AA, man. No. Like, you're just coming for the... I get mad at those guys. You're just coming for the chicks. But you know what? At least they're there. You know? And they brought this one woman. Her name's Eva. And I'm still friends with her today. We still go and visit her. She lives right there in somewhere. And she would come in. And one day she brought in this little Mexican guy. And, you know, when you've got 5 terms and 9 violations in the span of about 20 years in prison, and you've got no skill set, you've got no, I don't know how to do anything, I don't have any skills, you kind of lose hope. Like, what am I going to do when I get out of here? Where am I going to go? You know, what I like to see is I might be working at a McDonald's, you know? Really? McDonald's? You know, geez. So that little guy, she brought in this little guy, his name is Pete. Pete sat at the table next to her, had a little baseball cap and little glasses, little Mexican guy. She introduced him and he started talking, and he was looking right at me when he said, you know, when I was 17, I stabbed a guy 23 times in an alley right here in Silmar over a bad drug deal, and I killed him. And they gave me 25 to life. And I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, people that get 25 to life usually don't get out. And this guy's sitting across the table from me, talking to me right now, in street clothes even, like, you know, and he told me he spent more time in the hole. As soon as he got locked up, they put him in what's called a SHU program, which is solitary confinement. He was in there for 8 years. That's more than I ever did on any one of my terms. And he did that straight. And then he got out of there and went out onto the main yard. And he said that 8 years was where he got in touch with God. And when he got out on the yard, he started going to church and he started going to AA. Now, as many times as I've been in prison, look, man, they've got yellow lines that run here, and they run there, and they run everywhere. And those are out-of-bounds lines. If you just step over that out-of-bounds line, all of a sudden you're getting a write-up. Loss of 30 days. If you talk wrong to an officer, write-up. Loss of 30 days. You get in trouble just that quick in there. This dude did 25 years and never got one write-up. And it was because of the program that he was working, because of AA. You know, and he told me, as he's sitting across the table, he's telling me, I just started my own business. I got a girl. She's pregnant. We're going to have a kid. And he's free, and I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute. If that dude could do it after 25 years of being in the pen, that means I might be able to do it. Well, that gave me a little bit of hope. Like, I'm excited. Like, man, I'm going to get out there, and I might be able to do this thing, you know? And God was gracious enough to put people in my life that helped promote me to have a better life. You know, I have choices today. I don't hang around with people that do stuff that's going down. I only hang around with people that are going up. Doesn't mean that I won't reach my hand down and help somebody that's on their way down, but I'm not going to spend quality time. I'm going to spend my quality time with people that are trying to advance me in life and that I can try to advance in life, you know. You know, when I started this program, my main thing was, you know, in prison, I didn't have a sponsor. It's not like I could call somebody just willy-nilly. They're not allowed to give us their phone numbers, so I really didn't have a sponsor, and I knew I needed one. So I sat down with a couple friends in there, and we went through the steps. And I started internalizing the steps. I started actually applying them, along with my foreman who was in the program. He helped me to kind of understand these things and, you know, like, you know, having integrity. He told me, you know, having integrity means that if I'm not looking, you're still going to do the right thing, even if I'm not looking, because you know it's the right thing to do. You know, just little things like that. And I started growing in this program. When I started this, all I wanted to do was quit using and drinking. That's all I want to do. I know if I quit using and drinking, my life will get better. Has to. You know, and they say it's a simple program, so I can do this. And then once I got in here, we got to that fourth step, shit started getting complicated. Because that's all in here. All this shit's in here. And this is, let me tell you something. Y'all want to say, fuck that place, crawl in here for a minute. Yeah, this is messed up in here. So, you know, the obsession to use was lifted. I don't feel like using or drinking anymore. I don't think about it. And I've learned that when I do think about it, I change my focus. I quit. If I think about using or drinking, and I keep giving that thought energy and I keep battling with it, it's going to stay right there until it wins. But if I just take my mind off it and just start doing something else, and that's where that 12 step comes in. If I do something for somebody else, it takes me out of me. Because my ego is where the Satan likes to run. That's where the devil likes to run, is inside my ego. You know, I remember when I first got out, the first thing I did before I found a job, before I found a church, before I did anything, I went and found a group. And I found the Freedom Group in Lompoc. And I walked in there and I was nervous because I didn't know anybody, you know. I sat over in a corner somewhere. I hope they don't call on me. I don't really want to talk. And I was in there for about like 3 months. You know, and they got to where I walked in the door, hey, Gino, what's up? Hey, doing all right. I know people. That's my seat right there. You know what I mean? I got this. And I'm sitting there one day, and you know, we got some people in there that got some time. And usually they're the first ones that, you know, they'll call on those guys to speak first. And there's one day that I was sitting there, and I was like, man, I really got something to say on this subject. I go, ooh. And everybody that's speaking, I got, ooh, I'm wrapping up some more stuff I can say. I got some more, okay, I got it all in here. And they'd go around the room. They'd go, how about you? How about you? How about you? Come on, man, how about me? Call on me. Call on me. You know? And they didn't call on me. And then they opened it up. Well, does anybody want to share? And I thought to myself, screw that. You should have asked me if I wanted to. I'm not going to share now. If you'd have called on me, I'd have shared. But not now. Now I look like I'm needy. My freaking ego was taking over, you know what I mean? I started wanting to run the freaking meeting. I wanted things to go the way I wanted them to go, you know? And you know, at first I just wanted to be accepted, and then once I get in there, my ego wants to take over, and I want to run everything. And this program has helped me. I got people like Matt right here that, man, I love this guy. I met him on this last term in Jamestown. We were on the same yard together. And as I see him walking by, you know, usually when you get in there, the first thing you do is you find that California likes to segregate their people. So they put blacks over here, Mexicans over here, and whites over here. So when I get in there, I look for the group of whites, and I find out, hey, who's from IE? Okay, that's my car. That's who I kick it with. Those are my boys right there. You know, and that's just, everybody clicks up like that. And this last time in, I decided I'm not clicking up. I'm not going to go hang out with nobody. I'm going to do my own program. I'm going to do my own thing. Because I'm not going back to that same way again. And I saw Matt in there, and Matt was kind of the same way. I noticed that he didn't hang out with the crowds. He did his own thing. You know, I didn't see him again until about a couple months ago. Well, about a year ago, I was taking some college courses to become a counselor. And I saw him in one of my classes, and I was like, I know you. And then we talked. And since then, we've been hanging out, and like, you know, when I decided to get sober and I came out here, I'm thinking, man, I was hooked on adrenaline. I was hooked on the having people around and being in the mix all the time, all the drama and the chaos, as well as the drugs and the alcohol. And now that I quit those things, I still like the adrenaline, but what do you do to have fun when you're sober? Holy crap. Life's kind of freaking boring, right? So I said, you know what? I'm going to pick up fishing. It's cheap. You know, it doesn't cost a lot. And as soon as I hooked into a fish, oh, that's it. I found my new addiction. Oh, God. And it ain't freaking cheap. I just bought a boat, man. Break out another 1,000. You know, but, you know, in the programs, you know, I we hear the other people saying the same thing. Like, what do you do when you're sober? Like, what do you do to have fun, you know? And other than the AA functions and the, you know, the parties and stuff like that, you know, I started speaking up, saying, if you guys want to have some fun, come out fishing with me. And we started a group called the Sober Shark Hunters Club. And we're about 10 people strong right now. And Matt decided that he wanted to go out and join us last week, and liked it so much he came out again this weekend. But the nice thing is, like I started out on the Santa Barbara Pier, and you know, this is how God works in this program. I'm standing out there fishing, and I've got two big poles out there. I'm fishing for shark, and I've got my small pole, and I'm just catching some mackerel to fish for the shark, you know, and kicking it. And I look over, and there's Asians. The Asians are crazy. They come out there, and they, yeah, I'm watching them. And they're sitting over there by the pole taking pictures, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. And I look over, and he's got my pole in his hand. Hey, take a picture now. Take a picture now. Hey, put my shit down. I don't know how your country does things, but that's my pole. You know? But I'm standing there, and you know, I'm a people person. I like meeting people and talking to people. You know, and people come, hey, what are you catching? Oh, not a whole lot. But, you know, we're here. That's why they call it fishing. If it was catching, everybody could be doing it. But you know, I had an old couple come up to me and right? It was catching, everybody be doing it. But I had an old couple come up to me, and they were standing next to me, and the guy asked me what I was catching. I said, not really much, you know. We're going for shark, whatever. Where are you guys from? Oh, we're from Oregon. No shit, I'm originally from Oregon. That kind of got us talking. And I said, well, what are you guys doing down here? He said, well, my son's in a little bit of trouble down here. So what's the deal? And he says, he's got a heroin addiction, and he's in jail, and we're down here trying to help him out. And as they're talking, his mom's eyes start welling up, and I started talking to her about the program, you know, and about enabling and just everything that goes along with it. And you know, if you train your kids the right way, even though they go away from that, they know what to come back to, you know, because it's in their core. And we talked for about a half an hour. And when they left, she came up, she gave me a hug. She said, thank you so much for talking to us today. You know, that really helped us out. They're not even in the program, you know. But I take this program outside of this place with me. And I take it, everything I do every day, I take this program with me. That's what I love about this thing, you know, that 12 step. You know, when I get irritable and discontent, it's because my ego is running away with me, and I want the things that I want, and I want them when I want them. You know, when I was locked up this last time, I met a guy that, you know, he told me, he goes, dude, you should be doing seminars somewhere. You've got a gift of gab. You know, you talk to the black inmates, Mexican inmates, you talk to the cops, the fire crews, you talk to everybody, and you get on their level. Like, you've got the gift of gab. And he goes, you should be in sales. Do you think so? So I got a book. I got a couple of books that I started reading on sales, and I studied about a guy named Zig Ziglar. Zig Ziglar. And Zig Ziglar studied under Napoleon Hill. And these two guys have some knowledge, just like Bob and Bill. They have this knowledge. And, you know, I don't know if it was because I was raised without a dad. And I think that was part of the problem. And it's not my mom's fault. She did the best she could. You know, she worked 9 to 5. I had new clothes for school. I had what I wanted from Santa Claus every Christmas until I was 19. You know? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I had a good life. There was no reason for me to be the way I was. And you know, somebody was saying something about being selfish and self-centeredness. And I was thinking about it. When I was a kid, you know, it was just me, my mom, and my sister. And if my sister would come into my room and play with my toys, I'd get pissed. I'd be like, man, you're not supposed to be playing with my stuff. Get back in your room. You leave my toys alone. Those are mine. You know, and as soon as she'd go downstairs to go do something, I'd be over in her room at her Easy Bake Oven, man, cooking her cakes and eating them as quick as I could before she'd come back up. You know what I mean? Like, what the hell is that? You know? Just wrong. And I realized that I was selfish and self-centered back then. And then you bring in alcohol and drugs into the mix, and that just zeroed me in. You know, I was sitting in front of my computer right before this last prison term, and I kind of came to my end. Because I had a bottle sitting there, and I had a big plate of that stuff sitting in front of me, and I had drank so much and done so much, I was just sitting there, I was like, I don't even want no more of this crap. And I thought to myself, what's the point? It was the first time that I'd been off of parole since I got my number in 85. I had a K number. And I finally kicked parole. I maxed out is what happened. They had to get me off. And I'd been off for about a year, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I've been off of parole for a year, and I look back, and I'm thinking, what have I done in that year? A year ago, I was sitting right here doing the same freaking thing. And I try to flash forward about a year, and I'm going, shit, in another year, I'm going to still be sitting here doing the same thing. And I thought, what's the point? What's the purpose, you know? And the next day, I was arrested and sitting in county jail. And every time that I went to prison, and even county jail, I always looked at it like I'm being punished. This is a punishment. I got to do my time, pay my debt to society, and then I can get out. And the world out there to me was like, it paused. It was just on standstill. And then when I get out, I go right back into what I'm doing. And everything changes. By the time you get out, everything's changed. Like, shit, this ain't even the same. Oh, I got to get back into the swing of things, you know? This last time I went in with the right, you know, when I asked God to give me a normal life, and I told him, I'll try to follow you. I ain't going to be perfect, but I'll do the best to follow you. I'll do the best I can. I'm not going to promise you I'm going to be perfect because I know I'm not. I'm going to make mistakes. He started putting the right people in my path to help me grow. And I realized that that prison sentence, this last one, and every one of them before it, it wasn't a punishment. It was a timeout. It was a chance for me to get right with God, you know? And I told God when I was in there, I said, you know what? I'm just going to get squared up with you. And I plan on getting out of there and going into Teen Challenge. It's a program, an alcoholic program. Going in there after I got out, and they would help me to get on my feet and do what I got to do. I said, I don't want to worry about girls, no pen pals, no nothing. And 3 months into it, he introduced me to my girl that I got now. Isn't that crazy? When you stop looking, he'll just put somebody right in front of you. But I realize it's not a punishment, man. It's an opportunity for me to change. It's an opportunity for me to grow. You know? Somebody said that this is a good program. This is a great program. All I wanted to do was quit using and drinking. That's it. That's all I wanted to do. I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. I just wanted to stop using. And once I found out that I got a lot of character defects and there's a lot of stuff wrong with me, and I started working on those, you know, I like who I am today. I look in the mirror and I'm like, hey, how you doing? You know, we're gonna have a good day today. But I used it as an opportunity to change myself. I'm not the same person I used to be. And, you know, I was thinking about those parents that gave me up for adoption that didn't want me. You know, and that rejection that I felt back then. And I didn't even realize, I just thought about this stuff just recently. I didn't even realize that I felt rejected. I was just, as long as I had a mom, I was cool. You know, and she's still my mom. She's always going to be my mom. She's the one that raised me. But I thought about it, and it's like, God's had my back from day one. God had my back before day one. See, my mom went in and filled out the adoption papers to adopt me before I was even born. So as soon as I was born, I was ready to be taken home. So it was already done. So God, in other words, God made sure that I was put into the hands of a woman that gave me a good life right from the gate. You know, and I thought about that woman. Why didn't she want me? Well, wait a minute. She carried me for 9 months. She went through the birthing, the labor process, and then she said goodbye to me. She did 3 big things for me right out the gate. Not that she didn't want me. She wanted me to have a good life. And I'm still looking for her. I'm still trying to find her. I'm DNA and the whole ancestry thing. I'm looking for her. I want to find her because I want to tell her thank you. I want to walk up and tell her thank you, man. Now, I would have never thought to tell her thank you had I not gotten to this program, and it changed the way I looked at things. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, man, I used to be a negative person, man. I had snide comments, and I was sarcastic, and the glass has half empty kind of shit, you know? And when I got into this program, I started seeing my glasses half full. But I got to a place today where I'm just happy I got a fucking glass. I don't even care if there's anything in it. I got a freaking glass. I earned this glass, you know? God, I mean, you know, this fishing trip that we took today, it's kind of like, they're like mobile AA groups, you know? That's pretty much what they are, because we talk about the program, We talk about the solution. We talk about how we're growing in God, how we can be better men, better husbands, better friends. But I got to keep my ego in check. You know, when I got out, I was out here in Lompoc for about, I'd say, 6 months? And I put applications in everywhere, you know. And I can find a lot of things to be angry at. And I put in these applications, and they'd come in and talk to me, and we'd sit down and we'd talk, you know. I made sure when I was in prison never to get tattoos anywhere below my sleeve line, because I knew someday I might have a life, and I don't want something holding me back like a tattoo right there, you know. that might hold me back. So I kept the tattoos up, and I'd go into these interviews, and I'd sit down and I'd talk with them. Hey, everything sounds good. Most people don't even know I've been to prison, because I didn't want to get molded into that, you know, hey, what's up? Yeah, you got a job for me, bro? Good deal. I can start tomorrow, right? All right, you're paying $20 an hour? All right, good deal. You know, I don't want to be that guy, you know? And so they do the interview, and they're like, you know what? You'd be great. I think you're going to work out good here. And then I wait 2 or 3 days, and I don't get a phone call. And I'm like, so I call them, hey, what's going on? Yeah, you know what? We decided not to hire anybody anyway, or we got somebody new, we got somebody else with more, you know. There's always something. And I started thinking, man, it happened so much, I'm like, these motherfuckers check my record. That's what they did. They went online and got the scope of me, and they're like, oh, a 5-star. And, you know, and at first I got pissed, and then I'm like, wait a minute. If I'm the manager of a 5-star hotel in Solvang, do I want a freaking 5-time felon that has burglaries on his jacket working right here at the hotel, you know? No, well, we can't have that. So, you know, and once I started thinking about that, you know, it's my wreckage. I created all that wreckage. I did all that shit. I can't be mad at them for doing what they think is right. I created this wreckage, and I can't be mad about it. I have to just keep, and here's the thing with anger, is if I sit in that anger, I can't step forward into something good taking that anger with me. You know what I'm saying? That's just going to hold me back. And if I get angry at this and I want to go over here and talk to you and I bring that anger to you, I might pass it to you and you could run with it. Why do I want to do that to somebody? You know? So, you know, I sat here for about 6 months and I wasn't finding no work and nothing would happen for me. And I ran a saw for 3.5, 4 years. So I had a buddy of mine that's in the program. He bought me a chainsaw. He goes, go cut some shit. Yeah. You know, like, that's a $400 chainsaw. He goes, I know, just get on your feet, go cut some shit. Nice. And so I started doing little odd jobs. And every job that I did it the best that I could. You know, LA County Fire Department taught me one thing. When you go in, you make it look better than you did when you got there. So I do that. And I'm quick and I'm efficient. I took a tree down out of one guy's yard and he came out 15 minutes later. He said, you're already done? Where'd my tree go? I said, it's gone. I got rid of it. That's what you want me to do? He's like, dude, that was quick. That led to three more jobs. And during one of the jobs, I'm sitting there and the guys were talking. I'm talking about what I used to be like and where I'm at today. And, you know, I ran into, he asked me, you know, what's your story? And I told him. And then I said, so how about you? You retired? He goes, yeah. I said, so what'd you used to do? I'm a highway patrol officer. But you know what? But I was honest. And he liked that. And he goes, you know what? I worked for him for 2 days and he called me up a couple days later. He goes, you want a full-time job? I said, yeah, doing what? He said, well, my son-in-law does tile. And they're looking to bring somebody on and train him. You want to come in and learn? Yeah. I've been there for about 1.5 years now, learning tile. Been picking up little side jobs and stuff like that, but you know, I don't sit in the anger, I don't sit in the negative, I stay positive. You know, one thing this program has taught me that I can't find happiness in anybody or anything else. I don't have any expectations. The only expectations I have when I walk out the door in the morning is that I'm gonna run into some assholes. You know, and when I do, I'm not surprised because I was expecting it. But if you're cool to me, now I'm like, hey, that's icing on the cake. That's a pleasant surprise. So I don't get upset. You know, I try not to get upset. You know, here's an example of how this thing works. You know, I went to the gym the other morning, and there's a woman in there that I dislike for a number of reasons. Anyway, She pretended to be a friend and then threw me under the bus for no reason. So anyway, I'm in the gym and I see her and I'm like, ah, there's that bitch. So I'm going to leave, and she knows I don't like her, and she probably don't like me. I don't care, whatever. So I go to leave, and she asks one of my partners if he'll escort her out to her car. Like, because she's afraid I'm going to do something to her. Because I've been to prison. Ooh, I'm the big bad guy. I was just like, how fucking arrogant. Like, I would actually try to go back to prison over your little skanky ass. Jesus. Awful full of yourself, you know? And I got in the car, and my buddy that's in the program, he works out with me at 5 in the morning. He gets in the car. Man, how dare that fucking bitch? That fucking skank hoe. And he's going, dude, that's not the Eugene I know, bro. What the hell's going on, man? You don't never talk like that. What's going on? And I'm like, I know. Whatever. He goes, dude, you need to let that go. And I, you know, from there to home, I kind of, I reeled it in, and you know what? It doesn't matter. She doesn't matter. It's okay. I put that anger out there first thing in the freaking morning. So I get home and I get ready and I go to my meeting because I was supposed to be at work at 8 o'clock, but my boss understands that I'm in this program. And he tells me, what do you need that program for? Why don't you just use Jesus Christ? He can save you. And I said, well, do you like the way I work? He goes, yeah. I said, do I do a good job? Yeah. I said, that's because of this program. He goes, all right, you might want to stay in there. Yeah. Because without this program, I'd still be the guy I was, and that guy didn't show up on time, and he half-assed his job, and you wouldn't want that guy. But you like this guy, so you might want to let me keep this. So I go to my meeting, and he knows I'm going to be 15 minutes late. So I go to my meeting, and I show up, and there's an RV parked in front of the place. Wow, an RV, that's cool. So I walk in, I start to walk in, and this guy comes out, and he goes to his RV, and I walk in the door, and I'm saying, hey, everybody, cheers, everybody knows your name.
Yeah.
You know, and they were like, hey, did that dude leave? I think so, he got in his RV, why? He was yelling, screaming, he was off his rocker. He was mad about something. I'm like, yeah, I think so. And some girl asked me for a cigarette, so we went outside to smoke, and he got back out of his RV, and he comes past us, and he told her, you need to quit fucking smoking. You quit fucking drinking, but you can't quit fucking smoking. You're a fucking loser. And then he headed for the door. I told him, hey, dude, chill out. Fuck you, mother. Sorry, I'm dropping a lot of F-bombs tonight. They're carefully placed, though. And I told him, I said, dude, you need to chill out. Fuck you, you son of a bitch. I earned my fucking seat here. And I followed him into the meeting, and he's yelling at everybody going in. I told him, hey, dude, I think you need to leave. And he slammed his cup on the table. Oh, you gonna fucking make me leave? Janine's over there, she's dialing 911. Somebody's gonna make you leave, it ain't gonna be me. You know? And I'm like, dude, you need to, he's like, what are you gonna do? I said, hey, why don't we take this outside, bro? Let's take it outside, right? We can do this outside. And he's like, oh, you threatening me with violence? So I walk outside and I'm standing there waiting for him and he kicks the freaking door. Bow! Door flies open, he comes out and he gets in my face. Ah! I tell him I love you, bro. I freaking love you, bro. You what? You man. It fucked with his head. Like, I thought we were gonna fight. I can't fight you if you say you love me, man. That ain't cool. But he kept. It's, you know what I mean? I love you. Too. All right, hug me, you know? But it kind of diffused him. But then he turned around and he started ranting and raving again, you know? And he got in his RV and I started videotaping him. Like, if the cops show up, I want him to see what we're dealing with, you know? And my thinking is, if I hit this guy, whether I'm in the right or the wrong, I'm probably going to go back to prison because I got a record. You know, when my name comes up on their thing, it says career criminal right out the gate. They already know who they're dealing with. Even though I'm not that person anymore, that's who I was. So I'm thinking, I can't hit this dude, so I just love you. So I'm filming him, and he's getting into his RV, and he's yelling, and he's doing all this other crap, and I'm like, yeah, okay, bro. Sounds good. Have a good day. He throws it in reverse and bang, right into the back of my truck. Jesus Christ. Are you freaking kidding me? Are you kidding me right now? All that anger I threw out at the gym just freaking came back to me. And it came back to me that quick. And I knew it as soon as it happened. Oh, because I put that out there. You know, I was raised to, you know, I was raised on certain things like, if you want it done right, do it yourself.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to take care of you but you. You know, I got a new philosophy today. You know, I mentioned Zig Ziglar. Zig Ziglar has a golden rule. You know, people say, you should be a salesman, bro. You could sell ice to an Eskimo. You know what I mean? Zig Ziglar says, you sell an ice to an Eskimo, that means you're a thief, you're a crook. Because you're going to sell him something that he already has and convince him that yours is better than what he's already got. The good salesman will sell somebody something that will improve the quality of their life. And if you're going into sales to make money, you're doing it for the wrong reason. But if you go into sales to help improve people's lives and the quality of their life, you're doing the right thing. The golden rule is, help as many people that you are in your circle that you can touch. Help them to achieve their dreams and goals. Mm-hmm. And in return, you'll get yours without even asking for it.
Yeah.
Automatic. That's the way the universe works, but that's not the way I was raised. I was raised to, you know, I got to get mines, bitches and hoes. You know, I got to, boats and hoes. I got to get mine and boats and hoes. I got to get mine. Screw everybody else. And when I was in my disease, I mean, I got shot in a guy's garage trying to steal his Banshees. I got shot in the back with a .357 because I'm trying to get mine. You know, I want to get for me. And I'm not like that today. When I first started fishing, I didn't have a boat. And we would drive down to Santa Barbara Pier, and we'd get out there. The pier opens at 6 o'clock. We're out there at 5:30, and we're waiting for the gate to open. And we creep out because I want to get my fishing spot because they catch sharks right there, and that's what I'm after. Because we're a sober shark hunters club, you know what I mean? And I want the shark because I can't keep calling myself a shark hunter if I don't catch sharks. You know? What club are you in? The sober shark hunters club. What do you catch? Mackerel. It doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? So I take off out of here, and I got to get there. I got to be there by 5:30. So I make sure we leave a little bit early. We're heading out. We're driving, and I'm about halfway out of Lompoc, and I see lights on the side of the road going the other way. And as I'm passing, I look, and I can see a woman sitting in her car. And I'm thinking, something told me, go back and help her, see if she needs help. No, fuck all that. I got fishing to do right now. I'm on the road. We're on a time schedule, and I've got people in there. I got bait, and we got a fish. And I got about maybe a half a mile down the road around a bend, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. You got to go back and help her. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm freaking going back to help this lady. He said, why are you going back? Because freaking God told me to. They thought I was freaking looped. What do you mean God told you to? Did you hear God? I didn't hear God. What the hell are you? And I went back, and she didn't have no signal. They're sitting there, and they don't have no signal right there. So they couldn't call anybody to come help them. So I ended up grabbing them up with a gas can and taking them back in with the gas and coming back out. But if I'd ignored God, I wouldn't have done what he asked me to do, and I would have just went on with my thing. I hear God's voice today, and it ain't about me. This whole thing ain't about me. You know, somebody asked me one time, what's your purpose in life? To have fun? Fuck yeah, to have fun. Because that's what I want. You know, today I realize that my purpose in life, it doesn't have anything to do with any stuff, any activity. It doesn't have anything to do with all that. My purpose in life today is to have relationships with people. Because when I die, I'm not taking none of that stuff with me. It's all going to stay here. But what is going to stay here is what I left you with, memories about me. Any way that I could have helped you in your journey to get where we're going. That's what it's all about. You know, some people say life's a game or life's a race. To me, life is a trip, man. And it ain't about the destination. It's about seeing things as I go, you know. And if I can help you along in your path a little bit further, fuck yeah, and hopefully you can help me. You know, that's what it's all about. It's like a big-ass family right here. All my network of people before, the network that I had around me before, were people that would come over to my house, steal my wallet, and then be like, oh, I'll help you look for it. No, I don't see it, bro. I don't know where it's at. 2 days later, they're bringing it back. Hey, I found this out in the bushes out by your house. Is there a reward? Hey, motherfucker. I got a new network of people. I've gotten so many people in these groups and these meetings that have helped me to better myself, and I've been able to help them. I don't know how many people I've moved. Oh God, I should start a moving company. You know what I mean? Really. But I don't mind it because it's helping them get where they need to be. You know, in a time of need. So, anyway, if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, this program not only works. Once you get into this program and you work it 110%, go after it like you used to go after your alcohol or your drugs. I'm going to tell you something. You'll be surprised. It works way better than I thought it did. Way better. Thanks for letting me share.